The Movie Lovers Podcast would like to give a shout out to our friends at The Movie Network. The Movie Network is a film-centric website that offers a wide array of all things cinema-related, including film news, reviews, giveaways, and showtimes. You can even post reviews and various content and communicate with other cinephiles. They have unique content going in every day. Basically, if you want info on a particular movie and want some originality in your otherwise mundane internet browsing, then the Movie Network should be your end-all, be all source for anything film-related. So, type in www.themovienetwork.com in your address bar and enjoy. Now on with the show.
Hey, movie lovers. Welcome to the 9th episode of the Movie Lovers Podcast, official podcast of Films We Watched. On today's episode, we have special guest Randall Unger from the Movie Network. Today, we will be discussing Clint Eastwood's newest film, American Sniper, starring Bradley Cooper, and discuss all films related to the Coen brothers. To follow Randall, go to Randall_Unger on Twitter, or check out his reviews on themovienetwork.com or realreviewsnyc.wordpress.com. That's R-E-E-L, reviewsnyc.wordpress.com. You can like the Movie Lovers Podcast fan page on Facebook, tweet us at Films We Watched on Twitter, and subscribe to us on iTunes under the Movie Lovers Podcast. Reviews are much appreciated. Special thanks to Logan Ulberg for producing the theme music for the Movie Lovers Podcast, soundonsite.org for our Films We Watched film review column, and to listeners like you.
Let me ask you a question, Chris. Would you be surprised if I told you that the Navy has credited you with over 160 kills? Do you ever think that you might have seen things or done some things over there that you wish you hadn't?
Oh, that's not me, no.
What's not you?
I don't tell you enough. I'm so proud of you. You're such a great father.
So you're not worried about what might happen?
I'm willing to meet my creator and answer for every shot that I took.
Don't pick it up.
Drop it.
So what, are you in Germany or where?
I'm stateside.
You're home? What are you doing?
I guess I just needed a minute.
Thing that haunts me are all the guys that I couldn't save. ready.
Oh my God.
I'm ready to come home.
Welcome back, Randall. Welcome to the 9th episode of the Movie Lovers Podcast. Today, we will be talking American Sniper. Mm-hmm. So, we have Randall, we have Catherine, we have myself, Chris. We're all bundled up. We're ready to speak about some sniping. Mm-hmm. Randall, what was your view on American Sniper?
American Sniper, one of the best soldier war films I've seen in quite some time.
Whoa.
I think the last decent film in this genre I saw was The Hurt Locker, and I think that was over 5 years ago. And basically, American Sniper, it was so gritty, so realistic. The action sequences were insane. I haven't seen action sequences like that since probably The Hurt Locker. They felt real, like it was actually happening, which was always a good thing in a war film. I thought Bradley Cooper knocked it out of the park. Very convincing. You actually really felt like he was, suffering from post-traumatic stress. And yeah, so far, I think it's the best performance of his career so far.
That's interesting, because going into the film, I had no expectation whatsoever with Bradley Cooper's performance, but as I was watching it, I think it's probably his best performance of his career.
Yeah.
So far, just because I really got lost in his performance. Usually when I see him on screen, I'm very aware that it's him, but I really felt like it was Chris Kyle being brought back to life. I really felt like the little nuances with his accent. He was pretty bulked up. He was pretty deep.
Yeah.
So even appearance-wise,
yeah, he did good.
He was just a complete difference than what I'm used to seeing. So, yeah, I totally agree. It is one of the better. I guess it's too late or too early, I should say, right now to say it's one of the better films of the year, but it really is. It's one of the great war films, as the buzz has been saying. A lot of people have been saying that this could very well be one of the better war films that's been made. So I agree with you on that, Kathy. What do you think?
I loved it.
Yeah,
It was a fantastic film. I was involved in the film. I think they did a really good job at keeping the audience really. Let's start over. Long day. I apologize. I woke up at 5 o'clock in the morning and I just got back home from class. I'm just so exhausted right now. So let me just start over. Mm-hmm. Okay, I love the film. It was fantastic. Okay, I thought the film was pretty long, but it didn't seem as if it was a long film since there was so much action that was going about.
Mm-hmm. Randall, back to what you were saying about the comparisons between different war films.
Right.
How would you say that this compares to something like a Hurt Locker? Because the similarities are very similar, I guess, because we're dealing with a single soldier. And you have some of those post-traumatic stress syndromes, those elements, but also it really kind of dives deep into a singular character as opposed to a war film like, let's say, Saving Private Ryan or Apocalypse Now that really dives into the grandiose aspect of war. Do you think that singular note, that singular vision on a particular war character, war soldier, makes for a better war film?
That's a very good question. Well, Saving Private Ryan and Apocalypse Now are classics, obviously. Mm-hmm. And they do focus on individual characters, Martin Sheen and Tom Hanks, respectively.
Mm-hmm.
But I think those two films, were more about the scope of war and war as a whole and how it affects, a large group of guys. The Hurt Locker and American Sniper are definitely more individualized. They mm-hmm. focus on just really just one man and his psychology affected by war. And all four films are very different.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when you take a human being and focus on his life, his personal life, and how that clashes with his, you know, career as a soldier, I think that element, focusing on just one man, is more of a gripping story and a powerful filmmaking.
I agree totally. I think when you do dive deep into those relations and those characteristics of someone who's troubled by war, you can really find the nitty-gritty and you can really find the horror that it is war.
Yeah.
What about you, Kathy? Do you find that the individual aspect of war is more powerful than talking about the war itself?
I really don't think I can say. I think it's very difficult to say that. I think it just focusing on the individual aspect of war can bring about a lot of criticism. I think when you're talking about a group of soldiers and their own perspectives of the war and you see them as a whole, I think you kind of get like a better rounded understanding of how of each of those soldiers deal with war. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a bigger perspective, but when you're just focused on one individual, it's different. And I think there is no one way of telling a story about war.
Right.
And I thought this movie, this film, really kind of tied into the aspect of a soldier coming home and how their environment is affected by them. And I guess maybe the lives of their loved ones are affected by it. So I think for this film in particular, that was kind of different.
Right. Right. Yeah, looking at that personal aspect, what do you think, Randall? Do you think that they dived into the home front, the wife and the children and the aspect around them better than you would say other war films?
Yeah, you know, I think it was a great balance of the two, having those action sequences in Iraq and then jumping to him at home after his, you know, each tour has ended. It was like a nice back and forth, like a ping pong match, you know, back and forth from war to home, war to home, and it really kept things very interesting, and it made you just there were no dead spots. It was not boring at all. I think the film was over 2 hours, but it didn't feel that way.
Oh, wow.
And you know, the like I said, the back and forth between the battlefield and being home, it kept things very interesting, and you know, I think it was done very well.
Right, right. It is interesting because I had no idea that it was more than 2 hours long. It felt well paced. It really did.
One thing that you mentioned, Randall, and I really wanted to kind of bring this up because I thought that the transition between the home front and him being at war was very smoothly made. Like, for example, if he's home, and I think there was a scene where he was driving with his wife, and you can sense that something was off, and kind of that scene, what that moment, that perspective right now that was happening to him kind of reminded him of being at war. And you can kind of tell when he was about to snap.
Mm, yeah.
So I think when you mentioned that, that quickly just came to mind, and I thought that that was very nicely played.
And going with the home front, I have to ask Kathy this. What did you feel about Sienna Miller's role?
I knew you were going to ask me that question.
Yeah, I always have to get the wife perspective on it, right? Do you feel like she was portrayed as a character on her own? Do you think she had a predominant role, or do you think it was more of just an aside? Do you think this was a nice highlight for the actress?
I definitely think she had a very predominant role. I mean, mm-hmm. she was the wife. I think that was the whole point. She was the symbolism for home. I you mm-hmm. know, and I thought mm-hmm. it was really interesting how at first, and I don't want to offend anyone, but I think she seemed very unlikable at first, because you were in the soldiers, you were, you know, in the perspective of Bradley Cooper, him at war, Chris Kyle, him at war, and you're seeing it through his eyes, through his own perspectives of you know, people dying, of him almost, you know, getting killed a couple of times. And then all of a sudden you come home and you're on this journey with him, and then all of a sudden his wife doesn't understand and she wants, you know, her own husband back. She wants the old Chris Kyle back. And that's unrealistic. That will never happen, because this person, the soldier, is no longer the same person he was before he went to war. So for me, in the beginning, I thought she was a very unlikable character. She annoyed me, but I mean, understandably, I mean, you're talking about a family member who doesn't understand war, and of course no one, I don't understand, and I don't think I will ever understand it, because I was never placed in that predicament. I'm not a soldier. So I think it was very well done, and her character was very important to just kind of made us realize how much we don't understand the mind of a soldier, and how much more we need to learn. Right. And I think she slowly transitioned. I mean, you know, it came to the point where she's trying to understand, and you saw her patience, and she was there with her husband, and she didn't leave him. And that takes a lot of courage.
Right.
So yeah, she was a very important character, and I'm very happy with how her character came about.
What do you think, Randall?
Well, you know, the character itself, it's a very important one, because that's who, you know, Chris Kyle has to play off of, and she's sort of like the voice of reason in his insane head, which is, like, filled with, he thinks he's okay, but he's obviously not. You know, the war is still going on for him, even when he's home.
Right.
And she definitely sees this in his eyes, which are, like, you know, you could just see right through him. It's intense. There's something brewing, and, you know, something's off. I think the character of Taya, I believe her name was.
Yep.
Good, you know, very, very important character to the movie. But honestly, I was not impressed with Sienna Miller's acting. I don't think she did a great job. She did an okay job. But I think pretty much any young, attractive actress would have, you know, been able to pull it off. And I think she's sort of like a cookie-cutter actress who, and you know, the character, I mean, I just wasn't impressed by her performance. And I feel any other actress could have pretty much done it, and done it better. Because the scenes between her and Bradley Cooper, I don't think she was a good match for him, as far as actors go. I don't think they had a great chemistry, but maybe that was the point, that their relationship was on the rocks, and I don't know. I really think they could have picked a better actress. That's my opinion.
I think I agree with you. I don't think there was anything overly special about her as an actress. Yeah. I do think overall the character was really important, but I do agree.
I agree with Randall. No, you worded that very well, Randall. And yeah, you almost think of someone like Jessica Chastain from Zero Dark Thirty, and how that was a completely different role. Sure, she was more of the lead, and she had more of a predominant role in that film. But even as a side character, someone like Jessica Chastain is a little bit more memorable. Mm-hmm. But, and to Kathy's point before, I think it's not so much about that performance. It's more about the symbolism behind the character, that she is home to Chris Kyle's character in War, and she's also a reminder to us that it's very difficult for someone to really fully comprehend the trauma that someone like a soldier has to endure in war.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're right. I think on the whole that character wasn't really meant to be memorable. So it really goes to show that this whole movie was a Bradley Cooper driven film. It was a single person film, if you will. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's bring it back to the beginning. I was just on the edge of my seat with that first scene, with him about to shoot that child, and then it flashes to his own backstory as a child. I thought that was a brilliant way of incorporating backstory into this film.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And anytime they do that, it's always, and the whole movie jumps back and forth.
Right.
So like I said earlier, it definitely keeps things interesting, and that constant, you know, back and forth is really, it's, you don't really see it a lot in many movies these days, but I think Clint Eastwood did a good job in that respect, you know?
Yeah, you know, it was funny because you kind of forget that it is a Clint Eastwood movie.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but with his last couple of films, it was very self-aware that it was a Clint Eastwood production. He's almost become a version of Woody Allen nowadays, where he's just pumping film after film out almost every year.
Right.
So this film, like, I actually forgot that he directed it. And to know that he directed of something this quality, I wasn't a really big fan of his last couple of films. I didn't even see Jersey Boy yet, or Jersey Boys, but
it was okay.
Yeah, it was, right. And that was the impression that I got from a lot of people, that, you know, his later films have just been okay since Million Dollar Baby, right? So, what do you think? Do you think this puts him back on top? Do you think there's still more to come by Clint Eastwood, or do you think he's just going in a downward spiral?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Okay, so here's my, you know, Clint Eastwood he's done great movies, obviously, but recently he's kind of gone downhill.
Mm-hmm.
However, with American Sniper, I'm just very curious because the man is 84 years old, and I find it very hard to believe that he directed these action scenes because they are so intense and so fast paced. I mean, you know, I honestly don't buy that Mr. Eastwood directed this. Like, I think he was, it's very apparent that he directed the, you know, the quieter sequences, the home scenes, but the action sequences were really intense. And I mean, I think maybe he had like assistant directors helping him with most of the shots, most of the scenes. So that's where I'm very confused. Wait, like,
Randall,
why
are you basing this on? Are you basing it on his age?
I mean, I don't want to be, you know, I'm not an ageist. It doesn't seem like the man has that type of energy anymore to shoot a film this way. I mean,
do you feel the same way about like a Woody Allen type of film?
Well, Woody Allen, I don't think he's ever directed an action film.
That's true.
It's a lot more demanding than just a straight-up romantic comedy, which focuses mostly on just...
Right. So, yeah, so getting back on track with being ageist against Clint Eastwood.
I'm not ageist, I'm just being realistic. I mean, when you're close to 90 years old, I don't think you still have the same fire you do as someone maybe half your age or younger.
I don't know, Randall. I've met plenty of 80, 90-year-olds who can really, you know, put me on their tracks, you know. I don't know. I think, and I was just mentioning this to Chris before, but I think there's always been a hint of violence in a lot of Clint Eastwood's film.
Right.
I do feel that, yes, of course, he probably has had help with these scenes of violence, and I think that goes with a lot of directors, right?
Right, where the DP. Yeah.
Have other people, you know, trying to do research or try to, you know, build these, you know,
action climatic shots.
Scenes.
Yeah.
But I think he's a very capable director, and I think this was a really different role because this was mainly all action, kind of, you know. But I do think, you know, this. this is him. I do think that this is something that he produced.
It is interesting to kind of compare these films with a lot of the Westerns that he's known for. Mm. You know, it definitely has that action and violent feel, but it just brings things to a more modern front. Right. So it's a good point. We can't, I guess, always judge a book by its cover sometimes. But, despite what any of us thinks, it is a great movie. And it makes things difficult when we're all agreeing that it is great. But is there anything that was memorable that kind of stands out to you in the movie that would just be your greatest takeaway from the film?
I mean, the only really memorable thing I could take away is honestly it's the action sequences coupled with Kyle's deteriorating mental state.
Right.
Those two things really stood out for me. Right. And I could definitely see myself watching this movie again on, you know, a nice home theater system because the sound effects were insane.
Mm-hmm.
And they were actually, the sound effects editing team was nominated for an Oscar. And I hope they win because I haven't seen another film, maybe Guardians of the Galaxy, that had such great sound effects. So basically the action sequences with the psychological trauma, those two elements really resonated with me.
Right. I agree. It reminds me quite a bit of movies like Apocalypse Now,
mm-hmm.
Where you get that scene with Martin Sheen where he's staring at his ceiling fan, and that brings him back to his chopper back in Vietnam. And right. You get that similarity when Bradley Cooper is looking at a television set, you know, or he's just staring out and he hears these sounds, you know, sometimes a door could slam or he hears something from outside, and that kind of triggers something that he remembered from the field of war. So it's right. It's those little nuances in the sound and sound effect that really creates that detail within the movie.
And in addition to the sound effects and the psychology of the film,
mm-hmm.
I think this is a great movie to show at like VA hospitals, and it's a great film for, you know, psychologists and psychiatrists to really dissect and use for their patients, to show them, to recommend it. This could be like a prescription for, you know, people suffering from PTSD, and it really highlights that illness. I mean, right. Just beautifully done.
Yeah. What do you think?
I completely agree with Randall. I kind of think it. I think of this film more of a prescription, not for those suffering from PTSD, but more for the general public. Mm-hmm. I think it's more to give an insight, like to the average Joe. You know, these are what they're going through. These are certain behaviors and feelings that they're dealing with. And, you know, as an individual of having someone who's in a military or gone off to war, you know, these are things that you need to really consider and you know, try to bring help with them. Mm-hmm. So I do agree.
And I did feel like that was a nice way that the film was leading to the climax. Unfortunately, the inevitable did happen, and sort of in a wrong course of action, his help with vet centers like this actually ultimately caused his death by helping some of the vets, and in particular this one person that killed him. But it was kind of a nice way of seeing how his involvement in this center kind of snapped him back into reality and showed that he had more purpose in life. So I thought it really made for a very poetic ending. What were your thoughts on the ending, Randall?
You mean the death?
The death, you know, just the lead up to that, the fact that through his cause, working with the vet center, mm-hmm. and he kind of regained his life, but then at the very end, it was cut short. Do you think?
Go ahead. Sorry. Well, okay. So honestly, I went into the film kind of fresh. I didn't really know anything about Kyle other right. than a famous sniper. Right. And I was kind of surprised when I found out he was killed, and even more surprised to find out it was by one of his brothers in arms.
Right.
So yeah, it was like, it was very tragic, obviously, and it really, you know, it surprised me when I saw that, because you're right, he did regain his life, his humanity, you know, and his lighthearted, you know, likable persona. Mm-hmm. And then it's just cut short by like a random, just like hanging out with a fellow war buddy.
Right.
It's kind of ironic that he spent four tours in Iraq, and he gets killed on the home front.
Right. Right.
That's what caused his death. That really that's what I found tragic, that he was killed not by, you know, an enemy overseas, but just in his backyard, pretty much. So, yeah, that was pretty moving. That was pretty powerful, and obviously very, very sad. So.
Absolutely. Yeah, just right at that very end when his wife kind of sees him go with his brother in arms, and you slowly see her close the door, and you kind of understand the inevitable. It was a very emotional ending. And it was just overall, I think we agree that it was fantastic. Going back to what we find that was memorable, as far as graphics go, that the scene with the sandstorm really blew me away. I didn't really expect to see something so visual jump out at me at a Clint Eastwood film, but that sandstorm really made me feel like there was some suspense throughout that whole chopper scene when they were going to that location to kind of bomb that area. It was just intense. It was just a beautiful contrast to the violence that was going on.
Yeah, agreed. It was very, very intense. Very well done, too.
Yeah.
Oh, I agree.
Kind of reminded me of the last Mission Impossible. I think there was also a sandstorm scene in
that's
that.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
And he's like running as well as, you know, Chris Kyle's also running. For some reason, sandstorms make for very compelling action sequences. I don't know why.
Right. Yeah. And just it cuts into this muck of sand that you really can't see through. It just provides some great intensity. I think that suspense, that overall feeling when he gets behind his gun, his rifle, and the choices that he has to make, I think that's what's going to stick out the most for me. It was just that whole intensity. Even going back to that shot of him making that choice and killing that boy, the fact that his fellow soldier put his arm on him, and he quickly said, "Leave me alone." You know, it just it really got you in the moment.
Right.
And I think this whole film is just that—a film that is in its moment. Yeah.
Agreed.
And it's funny. Kathy and I actually just recently watched Fury.
Right? Okay.
Well, so I didn't quite finish it.
We didn't quite finish it yet, but we're at the tail end. But just comparing it to that, Kathy, what do you think is missing in a film like American Sniper that something like Fury has, or vice versa? How do you think two war films, comparing them, what do you think one is missing in the other one?
I really hate these type of questions.
Honestly, I really
don't want to say. I really, when it comes to this topic, I really try not to be judgmental. I mean, I know we're talking about films, but we're also talking about two different types of war films. True. I mean, what I thought was kind of interesting when I was watching Fury, we were watching it last night, and it was the whole concept of soldiers, but they were in and tanks, right? They're mm-hmm. responsible and bringing the tanks and shooting. And I never even, you know, in my head, I didn't even realize that that could be a thing. I knew tanks, you know, existed and, you know, but I didn't realize the amount of effort, the soldiers in one tank and their whole life perspective, you know, mm-hmm. well, if it's real or not, I have no idea, but I'm just going based on what I've seen. And, mm-hmm. and I think that's just two different perspectives. You know, you have an American sniper, you have a sniper, you have people involving in, you know, shooting tanks. I just don't know. Mm. I think when it comes to war films, I really try to just absorb all the information I can and just, but I really can't make that comparison.
Sure. Have you seen Fury yet, Randall?
Yeah, I saw it. And yeah, like I said, like Catherine said, yeah, both movies obviously very different, but both war films, you know, you can't really, I think Fury is more of like your standard blockbuster. It's got, you know, Brad Pitt. It doesn't feel as gritty and realistic as American Sniper.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably because of they have two different directors who have, you know, varying styles.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really hard to compare the two.
Right.
And also, I think another thing is Fury was more of a Saving Private Ryan type, where it didn't really focus on just one man.
Mm-hmm.
Which, going back to the first topic we discussed tonight, you really can't compare them. They're very different. But I think American Sniper, you know, comes out on top as the better of the two.
Right.
Well, I think a lot has to do with it is that we know even before watching the film that American Sniper was based on a real person, and that there were some aspects of that film that were real. So I think, you know, with that in mind, I think it's also hard in trying to, you know, compare the two. I mean, they're both very different, and Randall's absolutely right. I mean, Fury is just like a blockbuster film. Right.
It's funny, though, because I was just constantly reminded about how lost I got in Bradley Cooper's performance. Because throughout watching Fury, I was very in tune to the fact that I was watching Brad Pitt play a captain of sorts.
Yeah.
So it just made me respect Bradley Cooper's performance a little bit more.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think he did a fantastic job in trying to lure the audience. I mean, you're there from the beginning, from you know, the very first scene, he has to make a choice, and it's a personal moral choice, and then it brings you back to his childhood and how he grew up with his father and hunting. So you're already so involved in his character, and as he progresses, as he's going through those four tours, you kind of see him change, and I think that's how we get lost. We get lost through him, in him, you know, in that, you know, his way of life. So I think it's a great film. I loved it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny because this time of year, especially, January is known to be a very slow month in the box office. And this film is just blowing it out of the water. What, it made $90+ million on its first weekend, and it's going 3-4 weekends already, and it's going strong. And it's kind of changing the way in which we think of January as this slump month. And I've been getting this feeling for a while that the box office is changing, probably to try to amp up the declining ticket sales. So you have an American Sniper that's doing well, and now we can put more Oscar-worthy films in a January release. Also, I had this feeling back a couple years now when Liam Neeson's films have been increasingly gaining popularity with the Taken films, Grey, when that came out, that was awesome. I loved Grey. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that the way in which we see the beginning of the year could really be changing. Do you think, Randall, that is happening? And do you think that more films like American Sniper should be invested in the beginning of the year and not wait till later in the year as expected?
That's a great question. The beginning of the year, you know, is usually very slow. But a lot of times, movies like American Sniper, they technically have been released in 2000, the previous year.
Right.
This is supposed to have come out. It came out 2014 in a limited release, and
right.
that is the typical way of doing things in terms of award season. It has to be for the previous year.
Right.
But I do think that American Sniper has kind of changed things a little bit by, the ticket sales speak for themselves. And it's surpassed Saving Private Ryan in North America as the highest grossing war film in the continent. So that's pretty impressive. I think this is a game changer. I'm hoping to see, more high caliber films, high quality rather, in the opening months, because it's a good way to start the year. And so far, I think this is the only film right now that's really blowing away the competition.
Do you think that when it comes to the end of the year and when people are doing their top tens, that people are going to forget American Sniper, or do you think it's going to hold on strong as it goes on? Video and DVD and things like that.
Well, I mean, I don't think it can qualify for the top 10 list because it's from 2014.
Right, right. Well, I mean, if you consider like a wide release, if you put wide releases into 2015.
Yeah, no, definitely. This is definitely a strong candidate for top 10 list. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just an overall great film. It's powerful. It's great acting.
Mm.
The action sequences blew me away. And it's, I don't usually pay for films, but this one I did.
Nice.
I usually go to screenings, but this one I didn't go to a screening. I just went and bought my own ticket. And I think it was worth it.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah.
So do you have anything else to say about the film? Any final thoughts before we get into ratings?
Sure, yeah, a big thing actually. I kind of thought we were going to discuss the whole controversy surrounding the film.
Good, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. So what is the controversy?
Okay, well, the controversy, as far as I know, see, I'm not a very political person, but I think the main issue people have is that this film glorified war and soldiers, and it kind of, it used the Iraqi people as villains, and like all Iraqi people are villains in this movie. It's like it doesn't really identify, that they're, fighting for their lives, that a lot of them are just poor people trying to get out of harm's way. And I mean, I'm not political, but I'm just. That's what I've noticed, and I've read a little bit about the controversy surrounding the film. Also, Clint Eastwood is a staunch Republican, and he definitely has spoken out about the war, how he's in favor of it. And I just wanted to briefly touch on the controversy that is surrounding the movie. I'm trying to separate the movie as a form of art as opposed to a political, political agenda.
Right.
That's how I went into the movie. That's how I left the movie. That it's a great movie. It's beautifully shot. It's great. The acting is fantastic. It's just a strong film.
Right.
And, I don't really want to, broadcast my opinions or what have you, but a lot of people have found a lot of things wrong with it.
Yeah, that is quite interesting, and I guess it's hard sometimes to not put your beliefs on a pedestal when looking at a film like this, because for us, anyway, we are American, and we have a film from an American director, so it's hard not to think that, a film like this is in the viewpoint of Americans looking at the Iraqi people as villains. I think that's just the situation that the film puts itself in, especially when you dive deep into this personal life of this soldier.
Yeah.
But it's funny that you said that about the controversy. I wasn't aware that that was a thing that everyone was in an uproar that it's portraying all Iraqis as villains and not about their poor agenda, about how poor they are. Right. When in fact, I recall the scene with that one Iraqi man and his son when the butcher, I believe, drilled a hole into his son's hand.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I mean, I really felt for him, you know. He was, you know, a foreigner. He was an Iraqi, and yet you got to, I got this impression that he was very sincere. He wasn't trying to, you know, cheat the American like the other guy, like that other guy who had that rifle elbow, and he knew right away that he was lying to him. Like, yeah. You can see a stark difference between those two characters, but I saw a lot of the poverty and a lot of the hysteria that went within the Iraqi people, you know. Mm-hmm. Even, you know, I'm gonna avoid saying that, but like, I definitely felt it. I felt the both sides. What do you think, Kathy?
This is a war film, and this is following the perspective of an individual soldier in wartime. I could understand that people are upset about it. I could understand that it's bringing negative light to the fact of, you know, Iraqis and whatnot. But, I mean, isn't that how it is in war? I mean, aren't you... Right. I mean, if you're a soldier, you're going into war, and I guess maybe people are upset that the film didn't bring light to the both positive and showing that, you know, there, of course, there are good Iraqis, and of course, you know, there's good and bad in everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But I really think I don't want to seem harsh or anything, but I do feel that this film is depicting another side of war, in the sense that, you know, the Iraqis that they were going into towns, these Iraqis were there. They weren't evacuated. They were there to kill American soldiers. So it's focusing only a group of people that were meant to be in that town for a particular purpose, and that was to kill American soldiers. Mm-hmm. Am I right? That's so. I mean, if you see it in that, you know, viewpoint, then, you know, there wouldn't be a lot of, you know, a side story as to the good of the people that were that would be in there. But I can understand how people would be really upset about it, and I do understand that. But I don't think that this story was about that. I think the story was about a soldier trying to deal with what he has seen, the violence he's been exposed to, and he's bringing that violence back home. And I think when you're in war, I mean, there's not really much of anything positive. It's all negative. It's all violence. Death, all death. It's all blood. There's nothing good about it. You come home, you know, traumatized. And I think this film was showing exactly that. So I think it's a very heavy film. I don't think this film is for everyone. And I think that's the reason why it's a great film, because it brings a lot of these issues up to light.
Yeah, right. I agree, and I think a lot of people, they're just blowing it out of proportion.
Right.
It's a really good movie, and they just have to put their political agenda aside.
Right.
And watch the film, you know, going in, it's entertainment, it's meant to entertain, it's not there to, you know, it doesn't have any political message, I don't think. I think it's a fun movie, it's powerful, like I said. Right. The acting is insanely good, and it should be taken as a film that has been made for the enjoyment. And it just bothers me that so many people are like against it, and how it's just a form of entertainment. People just relax. You know?
Right, right. No, I agree. 100%. I feel that there isn't a political stand in this film. It's just an observation about a man and his experiences and the decisions that he has to make. I think first and foremost, like we've been saying all along, this is a one-man film pretty much, and it goes through his personal stride and his struggle with dealing with war.
Yeah.
Were there other controversies surrounding the film? I know that some critics and film reviewers were kind of disappointed that it didn't dive deeper into his marksmanship. The fact that not only was he a good shot, but he also holds records for the longest shot. And
Oh, you mean that one that was like a mile long?
Right. And people wanted more of that. They didn't get enough of the fact that you have to factor in velocity and the curvature of the wind and the curvature of the bullet and, you know, the chaos theory of how certain things could really mess up the path of that bullet, and the fact that he was really in tune to that. I don't know. I got the impression that he knew his stuff, but
yeah.
Do you think that they could have dived into the technical aspects a little bit more?
Me or
Randall? Yeah.
Okay. You know, that is an excellent point. I definitely think they could have focused on the technical wizardry that surrounds sniping.
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't really get into that. It was just more about the man. It wasn't about his craft,
mm-hmm.
Which is unfortunate because I think they could have had an entirely different movie if they just focused on the sniping.
Right.
Also, another similar moment in the film, I kind of like the Navy SEAL boot camp. I thought that was those sequences were really interesting. I would have liked to have seen more of that.
Right. Yeah, you kind of forget that the course of the film happens with many, many years in between. The fact that he was a rookie and then develops into not only a mature soldier, but also a father with some toddlers. And you forget that this stretches quite a few years, and it was a struggle from him from beginning to end. Yeah. Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And talking about just the way the construct of the movie, Kathy, you brought about some research and realized that even the smaller details of the film were accurate. A lot of times you get filler with the backstory, like for an example, how Chris met his wife, but actually those details were real, right?
I was just Googling some stuff and came across Bradley Cooper made a comment about how Chris Kyle was murdered a year and a half into the development of the film.
Mm.
And because of that had happened, you know, the whole film kind of changed perspective. And he was talking about Chris Kyle's wife, Tyra,
mm-hmm.
And mentioned
Taya,
okay. I'm yes. sorry. I apologize.
Yeah.
No problem. And how...
She forgives you.
Yeah. And just the fact that she had a lot of footage and a lot of information that he was able to work off of. And he mentioned a couple of scenes in a film that actually happened in real life. They apparently did meet in a bar. And, he was hitting on her, and she did say, well, you know, I think, you know, SEALs are self-centered and arrogant. And then he replied something under the lines of, well, you know, I'm fighting for my country. How self-centered, you know,
can I be?
Mm. So apparently that really did happen. And, you know, they were drinking and having fun. And the first night she did vomit and he did hold her hair.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really nice touch, being able to kind of implement that into the film itself. It just showing you, I guess, you know, his own character, you know, and how it's based on real aspects and real, you know, parts of his life and mm. her life.
Yes. Yeah, sometimes you take those things for granted, but it's nice when a film really pays attention to detail and makes it as true of a story as it can be.
Right.
Yeah.
One thing I did want to mention, and just wanted to get your perspective on, I'm sorry, I'm really bad with names, but it's the villain sniper,
mm-hmm.
the Iraqi villain sniper. How did you feel about his character? And I thought this was interesting because he, I think, you know, he wasn't involved in the beginning of the film, but then he started coming around, you know, once Cal, you know, Chris Kyle was really gaining momentum and there was a bounty in his head. And then you saw, you know, this, you know, the Iraqi sniper, which I'm assuming was placed into this film as to be his counterpart, his villain, you know, the right. identical portion of him who's trying to, you know, he's just as talented. I believe he was in Olympics and he, you know, right. got gold, you know, the medal. So this, I think maybe, would you say was kind of a reflection of himself on the other side? And I wanted to bring that up. And I also wanted to bring up a scene. I'm sorry if I'm just talking about two things at once, but I just want to say it right now before I forget. But there was a scene where the Iraqi sniper received a phone call, and you saw, I'm assuming it was his wife and his child. And that was kind of, I thought, parallel to Chris's Kyle's life, because he also had, I think, just a child. And he just, right. I think, I don't know if it was around the same time of him with his daughter just being, mm-hmm. you know, his daughter was born and him at the hospital. But I thought it was interesting seeing how that scene with the Iraqi sniper brought about a family kind of aspect right. of with him and his wife there.
So you're dealing with parallels here. Yeah, Randall, what do you think of the Iraqi sniper compared to
Chris? Okay, obviously the central conflict wasn't between him and the Iraqi sniper, but it was a nice little side thing, you know, to have his polar opposite in battle. Kind of, you know, I think every, you know, great hero story has a villain, you know, Batman and Joker, stuff like that. They didn't really, I don't think they really explored their quote-unquote relationship in the movie, but, you know, it was a nice little side thing that they had to show the other side, the enemy side, and the same, you know, in the same role. Right. Of Chris Kyle. Right. So, I mean, I guess they could have shown more of that, but maybe that would have been too cliche. So I guess I'm kind of glad that they didn't get into that whole hero versus villain theme. Right. So.
I definitely felt it as a driving force, you know, throughout the whole movie. You really want to know if he was going to get that sniper, if he was finally going to get his day and kill him. And at the end, it really paid off, because it was that long mile shot that he made that actually killed the sniper. So I think that whole story kind of led up to that one point, to the fact to, you know, show the audience that he was a really good marksman. Yeah. But yeah, it definitely suspenseful. And I think they did it nice, where you didn't know enough of the character. You know, it kind of keeps the guy a little bit hidden, a little bit mysterious, so that, well, to your point about what side the audience is being taken on, it still keeps you on the side of Chris Kyle. You know, it doesn't make you question, you know, contrary motives or, you know, the opposite's viewpoint on things. So, to your position before, it might, in fact, make people a little bit mad that it was a little bit one-sided with the American view, but at the same point, you know, we could only follow the story of Chris Kyle, and if we have any other distraction and know people a little bit more, then it's going to take away from that story. So I think it was nice. It was a driving force. It was creating some questions, and at the end, it really did pay off when we saw him get killed. Good. And I never thought about that with the parallels between his kids and the Iraqi kids. It makes him think things a little bit different, maybe put a little bit more stress on him. That's a good point, Kathy.
Why, thank you, Chris.
Yes. Any other discussion points of American Sniper?
Not that I can think of.
All right. So, ratings, Randall, out of 4 stars, what do you think American Sniper deserves?
I want to say 3.5. Actually, I want to say just barely under 4 stars.
I agree. I would say definitely 3 stars, a little bit you know, more than three, but
Well, my question to both of you, why isn't a perfect score for you guys? Why is it just under?
Well, the relationship between Taya and Chris, it was a little, you know, it felt a little cliche here and there. Mm-hmm. And I really was not impressed with her acting with Sienna Miller.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if they got a slightly better actress, I think it might have been bumped up to four.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think other than that, I can't really think of any other cons. I think it was just a great film.
What about you?
I like this film a lot. I really do. I agree with Randall. I feel that the relationship with Chris Kyle and his wife wasn't really explored in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of made it, you know, a negative aspect. But I do see that maybe it wasn't meant to be explored further.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like her character was kind of just one-dimensional. You just saw a glimpse of her character, mm-hmm. right? She was mm-hmm. in and out of this film. And,
right, right.
And when she was in it, she wasn't in it for very long. It sounded kind of dirty, but she
was right.
Sorry, but do you understand what I'm trying to say? So I really don't think that we were able to really really like her.
Right.
And
you want more of that? You want to like her a little bit more?
No, not really.
Mm.
I really don't see any purpose to that. But I do think that just because of their relationship, something didn't click.
Right.
And I agree with Randall. I think you can really tell. And it could be just because of the actress. It could be just her and her acting. That just didn't make it click. Maybe there wasn't that chemistry. But I really do think that her character wasn't fully developed.
Right.
We didn't get to know her.
Right.
But then again, then maybe we weren't meant to.
Yeah, and as far as I go, I'm okay with that. Like, I'm okay without knowing more about her character because, you know, this whole film is so centered to Chris Kyle and Bradley Cooper that, you know, any other distractions would just be that, you know. So I'm going to go full out. I'm going to go balls to the wall and say 4 stars.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Voila.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when I look back at my movie-going experience, I really feel that suspense. And I think as far as an action go, as far as a war film goes, I want that in my film. So
yeah.
I'm happy with the amount of suspense that I got. And as far as watchability, like you said earlier, Randall, you know, I can't wait to own this and to watch it on my home theater over and over again.
Yeah.
Well, before we conclude tonight, we need to talk about this baby issue. Remember the scene where Chris Kyle was like holding the baby?
Did you know about this going in?
Randall, I was so pissed off at Chris because I knew that there was a scene about this baby scene, right? But I didn't want to know when it was coming because I wanted to be able to see if it's, you know, if it looked real or not. I wanted to know what was this whole commotion about. But right before, like, the scene came about, Chris nudged at me. He goes, "Oh, this is a scene with the baby." Like, damn it. So
it's a toy or something?
It was
a baby doll. And people were making such a big deal about this.
Right, because they were like, this is a Clint Eastwood film. You would think they would have more production value on the baby being used. But it was clearly a fake baby.
Oh, my God. I got to go back and see that scene again.
There you go. That just proves my point. Randall didn't notice it.
I thought it was real, though.
I think there are two scenes with the baby, but there is one scene where he's in a nursery and he's arguing with his wife, and then he picks up the baby and he's like sitting down. And he places it
in their home. Yeah, she was
just nursing the baby.
Yeah,
and it was that scene.
It was the scene where like she just painted the room and she's like, "Oh, you know, like you're never here. I have to create memories on my own." And she's kind of handling the baby. If you look close enough, you'll see that it is a very, very fake baby, and people have been commenting on it. Yeah, yeah. But that reminds me of that scene again with the suspense. When he's in the nursery in the hospital, and he's tapping on the glass for the nurse to take care of his child, you get this feeling that he's so paranoid. He's almost looking at the nurse as if she is an Iraqi, and that he can't fully trust her. You know, it's quite interesting to be in that mindset. Yeah.
It's funny that you mention that, because at the exact same time when he was looking at this nurse,
right,
in my mind, I thought the nurse was going to do something like really bad to this baby.
Right,
like,
because she was just built walking, that suspense. Yeah.
So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah.
Glad you brought that up.
Yeah, so just little moments like that are just great takeaways. Yeah. So, thumbs up for all of us. Cool.
Yes.
Anything else, Randall?
Well, I guess we're not going to be discussing that other thing.
The
what other thing?
The Coen brothers, or?
Yeah. Okay. Or save it for next time, or?
Do you want to do it now? I'm up for it.
Okay.
Go for it, guys. I'm not involved in this portion.
Yes, you are. Yeah,
I'm not there's not really much to say about Coen Brothers. I think there's only from my perspective, I find their movies just overall depressing sometimes. That I don't get it. I just don't like their films. There's one film that I really do like, and that's True Grit. But besides that, I can't say anything about. I'd rather just watch TV. I'd rather just go into the bedroom, like watch TV, and you guys can just talk about the Coen Brothers.
We want to hear your negativity.
I have nothing. I'm so biased against them.
We'll get to that.
All voices will be heard.
Right. Exactly. So, Randall, why were you compelled to talk about the Coen Brothers so much?
I don't know, because there's so much there to talk about, and their movies, like most of them anyway, are just fun and complex. The characters have many, many layers. The scenes, they're violent, they're funny, they're sometimes both, and they just. I really wanted to just like start a discussion about their work.
Right. So, do you know their work inside and out? Are there any holes to their filmography? Just to get that out of the way.
Who, me?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's see here. I've got the Wikipedia page open.
Okay.
So I'll just read off a list of their most notable works. In 1984, they basically got their feet wet with Blood Simple. Then they did Racing Arizona, Miller's Crossing, Barton Fink, The Hudsucker Proxy, Fargo, The Big Lebowski, Oh Brother Where Art Thou, The Man Who Wasn't There, Intolerable Cruelty, The Lady Killers, No Country for Old Men, Burn After Reading, A Serious Man, True Grit, Inside Llewyn Davis, and most recently they wrote Unbroken.
Really?
So, yeah, they. Oh, wow. I was surprised too. They wrote it and Angelina Jolie directed. So I was surprised by that.
Now I kind of want to see Unbroken even more. I was kind of on the fence with it. I really didn't care if I would watch there or not, but now I kind of want to watch it.
It's a good movie. It's not great. But another notable aspect of that movie is that Industrial Light and Magic did the visual effects.
Okay.
The dogfight scenes in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And it did have a slight Pearl Harbor feel to it. Mm. Did you see the movie?
Unbroken?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
No.
It's a rental. It's, you know, it's not great, but it's worth your time.
Okay. Good to know. So, after you were rattling off their films, I'm actually surprised. I've seen the majority of them.
Yeah.
I haven't seen, Barton Fink?
Oh, so good.
Yeah, that's in my list of shame. And Miller's Crossing. I haven't seen that, so I'm going to...
They came out a year apart from one another, and they're both sort of his early... you know, early thriller work.
Right.
They came out right after, actually 3 years after Raising Arizona. And I guess you could call that the early years of the Coen Brothers. You know?
Right. And just I am a big fan of actually their later work.
Okay.
I've been kind of on top of them since before True Grit, I want to say, before like A Serious Man, like around that period and on.
Okay.
I think that they've been really hitting it out of the park. Mm-hmm. Not to say that they haven't, but I think that made me conscious of them, and then I went back to their earlier works. And after realizing their filmography, I realized that one of the first films I've seen as a kid was The Hudsucker Proxy. I remember that was on HBO a lot.
Yeah, still is.
Yeah, right. And looking back, like it didn't faze me as a kid as to the fact that it was a Coen Brothers film, and the fact that it was kind of quirky and had these nuances. I really enjoyed it as a kid, and when looking back on it, I really enjoyed it again watching it as an adult.
Right.
So it does have that longevity to their filmography. And then there's other ones that kind of you have to be at a certain point in your life to kind of appreciate it. Yeah. And I feel like A Serious Man was kind of like that. I felt like if I saw that as a kid, I wouldn't have gotten it. But the nuances of A Serious Man, the fact that this guy was just one thing after the next, his life was just a complete mess. And then at the ending, it just, once you thought things were going to pick up, bam, it falls apart again. And I think that's just a great testament of life. I think that's a great...
You know that movie, I saw it once, I wasn't blown away.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it one of those you need to like see it again?
It's a lot. I think a lot of their films are
that's
like
true.
That.
That's true.
I feel...
And I think that's why I don't enjoy it.
Right, that's,
honestly,
I agree.
Yeah.
You hated Llewyn Davis.
I hated it. Yeah. I just didn't understand the concept of it, and the fact of the cat itself. Just the cat. The only image I have of this film is like the cat getting hit by the car, right?
Right.
And then it's like slowly like dying into the woods, and it's like dragging its legs. I'm like, holy crap, what's going on here?
Yeah.
So I think that's it. I think I've been biased with them from the very beginning, and maybe I should probably appreciate their work and try to. And I granted, I haven't seen many of their films, so that's why I really don't have much to say. And the few that I've seen, I just don't like. So maybe I should kind of just
watch their films
from a new perspective.
It is split between those that make sense the first time around and then those that don't make sense the first. Like, for a good example is The Big Lebowski. You know, I think a lot of people, I'm not sure about you, Randall, but I had to watch that 3 or 4 times to kind of start laughing at it.
It's funny about The Big Lebowski. When I was in college, I had a roommate who would always, every night, before going to bed, he would just play that movie on a VHS. He had a VHS, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He would play it to, like, it would help him go to sleep. And obviously, he was in a bunk right above me, so I would have to watch the movie as well.
Mm-hmm.
And after, like about 4 times, maybe a week or two of watching this movie every night, it eventually sank in. It was very funny, and it became eventually my favorite Coen, or at least one of my favorite Coen Brothers films.
I have no time for that. I'm sorry. I don't have the time to watch a film over and over again for a week or 2.5.
Yeah.
We're talking about watchability, and like a movie like American Sniper where, you know, you watch it because you understand it and you want to watch it and watch it again. And then there's films like the Coen Brothers films. And to talk about the film that we talked last time that we were together, Inherent Vice, it kind of falls in that category where you have to watch it over and over again just to figure it out. So I think it splits the public into 2 halves. One that wants to see it to figure it out, and those that can care less that, you know, they didn't get a chance or an understanding at first, so they don't want to have anything of it. So I think, Catherine, I think you fall into that category.
I think so.
But so what would you say is your favorite or one of your favorite Coen Brothers films besides The Big Lebowski?
I gotta say, hands down, No Country for Old Men.
Mm.
Really, really great movie. And actually recently, about maybe a few months ago, I saw Fargo again, thought it was really great.
Yep. Yeah.
That was like the third viewing where I finally was like, okay, you know what? I can see what all the hype is about. This is a solid thriller.
Yeah.
With amazing performances across the board. You've got William H. Macy, Frances McDormand, who won an Oscar for her performance.
And it's funny.
Yeah, it is funny. It's like a quirky, dark type of humor. And like I said before, it's got scenes that are both funny and shocking at the same exact time.
Right.
And it's like what's the thing where if you have something cold and you like put it in a thing of hot water, it like there's like a chemical reaction. I'm not a science guy, obviously.
If it's,
but Fargo was like hot and cold, and it just kept you guessing, and really, really. And Steve Buscemi is amazing in it as well.
It's funny though because Fargo, again, another film that I remember growing up. It was one of those films that it was hot at the time, so family just. It was our like blockbuster night. Like every what was it, Saturday or Sunday? You know, we would get a go to Blockbusters, get a movie, and that was it. And I don't think my parents fully understood the quirks of the Coen brothers. They just got it because it was popular at the time. Mm. But I vaguely remember understanding it as a kid. But looking back at it again, and we recently watched it a couple weeks ago for the first time in a while.
I didn't finish it. I decided not to. Yeah,
I fell in love with it.
Again. You don't have Fargo, right?
Oh, I would say that's probably my favorite Coen Brothers.
Really?
Yeah, it is. Some people might say The Big Lebowski, but that I like it because of its versatility, because it's funny, because it is suspenseful, and it has all these twists and turns, and I like that about them quite a bit. I like that, and I like the fact. The other aspect of the Coen brothers that they really have this meticulous detail about them where you have to watch it over and over again to kind of understand it. You know?
And all of their movies, I mean, it's weird. They all have similar stylistic touches, but they all are very, very different, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They all tell very unique stories. The characters really don't intersect. It's not a universe of films, you know, like the View Askew films, you know.
Right.
You know, those have, like, they tie together in a way. But with the Coen Brothers, that each film stands on its own as its own little compact universe. And I think that's what makes them so unique and so different.
Yeah. That sounds awesome, though, to have a Coen brother universe where all these characters exist, like a Simpsons world.
Right.
That would be great.
They kind of did something. Didn't they have, a Fargo TV movie or TV series?
Yeah, with Billy Bob Thornton. Yeah.
I don't know much. Does it tie into the movie in any way? Or
it does. I don't know too much about it, but you bring up a good point because I don't know to be answered to ask that question. The only thing I know is that it's based in Fargo. I mean, this was a true story too, if I'm not mistaken. The whole concept about this guy who has this plot against his wife and his father-in-law to kind of hold her ransom for money. I think that was actually a true story. So I think this TV show follows that story too. But it's interesting because I remember watching, and this was only a couple weeks ago, watching Fargo again, and I realized that I was watching it, and I'm like, man, this movie would be over in 2 seconds if they had cell phones. I mean, obviously, like, this took place in a time that didn't have cell phones, but I remember saying to myself, I wonder how this would hold up in a modern environment. You know, because the fact that there was miscommunication between this extra thug that he didn't really know, and you know the fact that they were kind of missing each other while he was kind of driving towards them, you know, it was like if you just had a cell phone, that's it, you're done, like movie over.
I think at one point, what's the character William Macy plays? He wanted to call it off,
right? But he couldn't
get a hold of them,
right? Right. Mm. So it's interesting. So I'm that makes me curious as to how well the TV show plays. And from what I hear, I haven't watched it, but I hear great things about it.
Right. Right. Yeah, I'll have to check it out myself.
Yeah. Well, so Kathy, you mentioned that your favorite, if you were to call it a favorite, Coen Brothers film is True Grit, right?
Yes, and I think it was because I didn't realize that the Coen Brothers
Well, it is a very populous film for the Coen Brothers, wouldn't you think so, Randall?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it either. It's a remake of, I think, a John Wayne film from the 60s.
Right.
And, yeah, that's another one. I think I need to see it, like, one or two more times. But, yeah, it did have potential, and, of course, an all-star cast, which is always a highlight for me. Right. But, yeah, it was, I guess, nice to see the Coen Brothers tackle a Western. Yeah. They haven't done that before. They've done, you know, gangster films, you know, going back to Miller's Crossing, which you haven't seen, I highly recommend. But yeah, True Grit was pretty decent, Yeah,
I'm gonna have to watch Miller's Crossing now.
Oh my God, Miller's Crossing and Barton Fink, you have to.
Yeah, just do one on top of the other.
Yeah, do a double feature. They're great.
Okay, I'll do that. I'll put it on top of my Netflix queue, my DVD
queue.
Nice. Cool. So, yeah, and thinking about popularity, I think for the general audiences, I think of something like The Lady Killers or maybe a Hudsucker Proxy, something like that, I feel like plays to the masses more. But I really don't think that's where their shtick is. I think it's for the cinephiles who really want to invest the time in watching those details over and over again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
And I think Inside Llewyn Davis is another one of those types of movies that I saw. I only saw it once, and I liked it. I didn't love it, but it was very visually appealing, and I thought Oscar Isaac was very, very good in it.
Right.
And basically, nothing really happens. It's just him walking around in the snow, trying to get a deal as a musician to hit it big, and it was just so subtle. I think it there's like hidden some hidden beauty in that movie. I didn't see it the first time, but I'm pretty sure I'll see it the second time.
So Randall,
yeah.
So inside Llewyn Davis, what would you say, if you can sum it up in like one or two sentences? What was the point of this film?
The point is, I don't think
you should
really
see the disgust on her face right now. It's fun.
Yeah. I think there really was a point to the movie. Honestly, it's just a guy. He loses the first scene. He loses a cat, and then it's him just wandering around the city trying to find the cat. And other than that, he's a struggling musician who doesn't really make it. And it's a little tragic, but I guess it's also very realistic. And I think the Coen Brothers it's one of their more realistic human dramas, I think. You know, all of their other movies are kind of cartoonish, kind of like off the wall, quirky, bizarre. But Inside Llewyn Davis felt like it was really happening.
Right. And I got the same impression with A Serious Man. It's the same thing. It's a very real perspective. Yeah. Maybe except for the ending, but you know, it just follows a story where there isn't really a climactic ending. It is what it is, and you gotta see it for what it's worth.
So you would say there's no character development then when it comes to Serious Man, or with Llewyn?
Yeah, I would say so, especially with Llewyn Davis, because he didn't really change at the end, from what I remember.
No, he didn't. And I think that's where I don't like their films as much because I'm all about character development. I love going into like the theaters. I love watching a film and then actually learning from the film itself, leaving, you know, the theater and being like, wow, you know, that made an impact in my life. And I just don't feel that way when I watch their films. Except when it comes to True Grit, I think
having that might be the exception.
That female the character, you know, in her time, she was very vocal, she's very smart. You know, I thought that was a really nice twist and change, and I think that's why I enjoyed that film. It was kind of entertaining for me to watch. But I think that's why I really don't like their films, because I'm not getting anything out of it.
What do you think about that, Randall?
Oh, getting stuff out of a Coen Brothers film.
Right, right.
You know, it's... Oh, there's such an acquired taste. Like, I remember seeing Fargo for the very first... I think that was the first Coen Brothers film I ever saw. I think I was 10, 11. And it was so disturbing at the time for a child to see that. But
You said Fargo?
Yeah, Fargo when I was like 10 years old.
The wood chipper scene?
Oh, God. The whole movie, pretty much. Any scene with Peter Stormare scared the hell out of me. That guy is intense, but, you know, then I saw it again, like, a few years after that, then I became, a teenager, and then I saw it when I was, the most recently, it was a year ago I saw it, and it was awesome, it blew me away. I don't know if you can take much away from a Coen Brothers movie, because they're all so different, and they really don't have much to say. I think they just want to tell a good story, and, you know. They have these old-fashioned stories. Like, The Big Lebowski is basically a private... It's like a detective story. Right. But the way they tell it is just so vivid, so colorful and wacky that you leave the movie feeling kind of happy that you saw the movie. Right. I can't say the same for Inherent Vice, which we've talked about already last show. But I think... Pretty much the majority of the Coen Brothers films, you walk away feeling good and, you know, happy that you saw that movie.
Right.
They're just fun films.
Yeah. Sometimes seeing a slice of life is enough, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes whether it's a good slice, whether it's, you know, a pecan pie.
You're making
pie,
me hungry.
Or, me too.
Whether it's a dirt pie. You know, like, it is what it is. I think... You do fall into that category, whether you like that or not. I think the Coen brothers are like that. There's no middle. It's either you like them or you don't.
Yeah.
What would you say for the people that say nay, like Catherine, what do you think is that film in the filmography of the Coen brothers that could change their opinion, Randall?
Oof. Well, that's a very good
question. Take your time, Randall.
Well, I'm very partial to The Big Lebowski, obviously, but you know they're all. I'm looking through the list. They're all so different. They all have different stories and themes. I mean, No Country for Old Men won the Oscar, and deservedly so. And if you like intense thrillers and go that way,
Go
Lebowski or Hudsucker Proxy, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that might be. You are right. One is so different than the other.
You can't just pick one.
Yeah.
You know, you need like a handful of them, and because they're all so great.
Yeah. A little tidbit: No Country for Old Men was the first Blu-ray I ever bought.
Nice, that's a great one to own.
Oh my god, I remember.
Yeah,
you were so happy.
Yeah, it was a steelbook. It was a steelbook too, and I was like, woo.
Wow!
And,
he bought a plastic sleeve for it and everything.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah, you gotta do it right. Mm. You so the Hudsucker Proxy maybe.
Okay.
That is a difficult question. I retract that, but yeah, I think I think the answer is just watch all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agree.
Just pick your favorites from there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I think on Netflix Instant they only. They have Barton Fink, but
right.
They don't have Miller's Crossing, so just FYI.
What, for my purposes, what do you think I should watch first?
You could see them in any order. It doesn't really matter, because Miller's Crossing is a straight-up gangster film, and Barton Fink is more of a drama between two men, one of which is a writer writing a screenplay, and he meets John Goodman. And all of this crazy stuff happens. But yeah, you can see them in any order, pretty much. It'll be fine.
Yeah, I gotta do that. Cool.
Now I want to watch one.
Nice. Maybe we can watch one and then talk about it next show.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Kathy's just rolling her eye.
Mm-hmm. I'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
There you go.
I'll try.
Very cool.
Nice.
Cool, Randall. Any other thoughts about the Coens?
I mean, I just hope they keep doing what they're doing because they're really on top of their game. And I'm reading here that they're writing. Hold on a second. They're writing a Spielberg film. So it's called St. James Place. It comes out this year, actually. It's a spy thriller with Tom Hanks. Wow. So you've got Hanks, Spielberg, and the Coens. This is going to be insane.
Oh, wait. Is that the Cold War themed movie that Spielberg's doing?
Yeah, based on the 1960 U-2 incident.
Whoa.
Cold War. Yeah, about a lawyer thrust into the center of the Cold War.
That's interesting because Spielberg was a producer on True Grit.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
So it seems like they have some chemistry between the filmmakers.
Oh,
interesting.
Wow.
Cool. That's on top of my list now.
We're going to have to review that in the future.
Yeah.
St. James Place, it's called.
St. James Place.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Here's a fun fact that I'm just thinking about. Has nothing to do, well, kind of. Bill Murray took on the voice of Garfield.
Yeah.
Do you know about this?
I know he voiced Garfield in that and the sequel.
Right. He agreed to do that because he thought the director was Joel Cohen, but Cohen was spelled different, so he didn't realize that it was a completely different person, but he took on the role because he thought that a Cohen brother was directing Garfield.
He continued to go through with it?
I guess he just said, you know what, I did it this far, I might as well. my end of the bargain.
Joel Cohen,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
With an E.
yeah, something like that. Yeah, at this point, yeah.
That's a really good tidbit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Imagine that, Garfield on the Cohen brothers filmography. That would be for
insane.
The populace. That Kathy would like that one. Yeah.
Nice.
Cool. Yeah, good stuff. So I think that should be the lookout for next time. Anything else about the Coens?
Not at this time, I don't think.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think we covered it pretty much.
Cool.
For now. Maybe there might be a part two Coen Brothers conversation. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure. Like you said, each of their films is completely different from the next. So, you know, we can have a completely different conversation next time comes around.
You're right.
Okay. All right, Randall. Well, I think we can wrap it up now. I just have
a few things to say about the Movie Network.
Oh, yes. Yeah, please do.
If that's okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so basically, they told me to say in the next episode to mention a package giveaway for Black or White, and that viewers have a few more days to win the Daniel Radcliffe thriller Horns on Blu-ray, and that we will have more giveaways this month, including The Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby. Also, there will be a Movie Network team on the red carpet at the Writers Guild Awards on February 14th, and I just thought I'd put that out there.
Great, and they can just go to themovienetwork.com. For details.
Right.
Great.
Yeah, feel free to visit the site for all your movie needs, reviews, news, and giveaways, and what have you.
Great, Randall. That's great. Make sure everyone to go to themovienetwork.com for those details. And yeah, until next time.
I am the man of constant sorrow. Seen trouble all my day. I bid farewell to old Kentucky. I'll meet you home.